This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open-line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now, with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Well, the Syrian regime has fallen, at least for the standpoint of rulership by Bashar al-Assad. And indeed, people are asking the question, does this have anything to do with biblical prophecy? Does this have anything to do with end-time scenarios? We're going to attempt to answer some of that here today on Viewpoint. But before we do, we're going to take a look at the dynamics of what are taking place even as we speak. Because all of this, biblical prophecy always takes place in the context of issues, things that are taking place, geopolitical issues that are taking place on terra firma here. And sometimes it's difficult to understand what those connections might be. So today on Viewpoint, we're going to lay out, spend the first half of the program laying out the dynamics of what are taking place, and in some respects, how those are viewed by some of the folk around the world, including in Israel, including the U.S., including Russia, including Iran, and other various nations. All the nations of the world are concerned, have their eyes fixed on Syria, and in particular, Damascus. Why Damascus? Because Damascus is to Syria what Washington, D.C. is to the United States of America. Damascus, one of the oldest, perhaps the third oldest city in the world, has had many, many turmoils, many quasi-destructions over history. We'll take a look at some of those here. We don't have time to go into all of it, but we're going to take a look at some of it just so we get a picture of the dynamics of what are taking place now. One leader in Israel says that the fall of Assad is a golden hour for Israel, a chance that won't return. That the Shiite axis has collapsed. That is, Iran using Hezbollah and Syria and Hamas there in Gaza as a means of controlling Israel and preparing for Israel's fall. But now Assad has fallen, and with him Damascus, and with him the potency of Syria as a tool to be used by Iran. Hezbollah has largely fallen because of Israel's recent attacks there. And Gaza has been seriously weakened, Hamas there in Gaza. And so the situation in the Middle East has dramatically changed, almost in an instant. Now, I want to make a mention to you of something here, and that is, don't ever say never. When God has spoken, don't ever say never. Don't ever say, well, that couldn't possibly happen. A lot of people say that with regard to the rebuilding of a third temple. Well, that couldn't possibly happen. It would start World War III. Okay, so it starts World War III. That doesn't mean it isn't going to happen. You see, so people use their human thinking to try to rationalize away from things that God has already predetermined, already said in his wisdom, in his omniscience, has already said. So just comfort yourself with the fact if God has spoken, it's going to take place. Now, we know that Damascus has been mentioned at least 55 times in the King James Version of the Bible, most often discussed in the book of Acts, that 13 times, in the book of 2 Kings, 8 times, in the book of Isaiah, 5 times, and mentioned in 15 books of the Bible and occurs 55 times in the Bible. So you would have to believe that the word Damascus and the capital there of Syria was very, very important in the history of Israel, but also in the mind and heart of God. The God who would make and declared Israel the apple of his eye, who also took concern that Damascus represented a chief enemy in opposition to Israel and Judah, and also, in effect, to those who would embrace the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob throughout the world. So As I welcome you to Viewpoint here today on Viewpoint, we're going to continue to confront the deepest issues of America's heart and home. This is one of those right now. You might not think so, because you're thinking about legal cases that are taking place and being resolved. A great announcement here today that a man who had protected and rescued a whole lot of people on a right there in New York, and then was charged with manslaughter and other serious charges, and today was actually released from all of those, the jury declaring him not guilty. He should have been declared not guilty because it was a situation that, if there ever was one, that was in self-defense, not only for the man himself, but of all the people in that transport, he certainly should have been declared not guilty. In fact, they should have never brought the case. It was a man, as far as I'm concerned, as a lawyer, a former lawyer, practicing lawyer, that is, it's one of those situations, what I would call prosecutorial hubris. In other words, in liberal New York, the prosecutors wanted to take that case and to try to make an example over a white man who happened to, the person that he was protecting against happened to be black. It's unfortunate. Fortunately, justice, real justice, did prevail, notwithstanding all of the racial overtones. So today on Viewpoint, we're confronting the deepest issues of America's heart and home from God's eternal perspective. And that's the perspective that we always want to have, isn't it? We want to have the Lord's perspective. And when we see massive geopolitical developments like this, we have to ask ourselves, it's only normal and natural for true followers of Jesus Christ to ask themselves, what is the significance, if any, of this particular event from God's viewpoint? In the pattern and direction of history, what is the significance from God's viewpoint? Okay, that's what we're going to be looking at. Is the Syrian situation a fulfillment of biblical end time prophecy? We know it was significant in that time because when the Aramaeans of Damascus came to help Hadadezer, king of Joba, King David killed 22,000 Arameans. And then he put garrisons among the Arameans of Damascus and the Arameans. Well, did you know that Abraham himself was a Syrian? That's right. Abraham himself was a Syrian. He was not a Hebrew. He was a Syrian. That may come as a shock to a lot of people, but Abraham was a Syrian by his own confession. And so there's a lot of connectivity here that could be made, a lot that we could discuss in the 40 minutes or so remaining. But here we go, attempting to launch into the deep to see at least where things are with regard to the current geopolitical events and the attitudes thereof. We're going to go very quickly through that. And then in the second half of the program, we're going to move back into the biblical view of this and how we should view it and conclude. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Well, the Syrian government has fallen to fast-moving rebels, ending 50 years of iron rule by the Assad family, actually 54 years. Syrian state television aired a video statement by a group of men saying that President Bashar Assad had been overthrown and all detainees in the jails had been set free. Well, that's a lot of political prisoners. That's a lot of prisoners there in a nation that was governed by a tyrant, a dictator in the name of democracy, named Bashar al-Assad. Many of the capital's residents were in disbelief at the speed at which Assad lost his hold on the country after nearly 14 years of civil war. Soldiers and police officers left their posts and fled, and looters broke into the headquarters of the Ministry of Defense. In fact, families were seen wandering through Assad's palace and picking up furniture and so on. Well, I guess there would be a lot of treasures there because he hoarded an awful lot of the riches of the wealth of Damascus and of Syria to himself. So an article came out in the Jerusalem Post yesterday, how Bashar al-Assad's fall will shake the Middle East from Syria to Israel. The fall of Assad's regime can shake the Middle East. Well, how can it shake the Middle East, or has it already shaken the Middle East? The answer is it's already shaken the Middle East, but where the shaking goes, how far this great, shall we say, geopolitical tectonic earthquake is going to rattle the entire Middle East and echo out through the world remains to be seen. But it appears to mark the end of an era, one in which there was a clear single authority over most of Syria. The Syrian rebels consist of a collection of groups and organizations that do not necessarily share the same vision, and save for their unity against the Assad regime, their common enemy. Well, what is it they want to bring into power then? Why were they trying to depose Assad, and what do they intend to put in its place? The United States has already declared one of those groups historically as a terrorist group. So are we going to exchange one terrorist for another terrorist? What can we expect from this? What can the world expect? Where does it fit in the bigger picture of Iran and Hezbollah and Jordan and Saudi Arabia and Gaza and all of these different places? Everything has been shaken. Iran is watching its most valuable asset. Iran understands that what remains for them after the severe blows dealt by the IDF to Hezbollah and the collapse of Assad's regime is the nuclear program, their nuclear program. So they will soon face a very significant dilemma. Should they push forward with their nuclear program when Donald Trump, they know, is very much antagonistic to it, notwithstanding the fact that Mr. Biden sought to play pussyfoot with them, so to speak. Hezbollah, reeling from the IDF's hits, is recalculating its path, trying to salvage weapons stockpiles in southern Lebanon. Its logistical backbone was Syria, and that has collapsed before their eyes. Where else are these people going to turn? These are the arch enemies of Israel. Then Jordanian King Abdullah II understands that at any moment the rebels could push into Jordan and jeopardize his country. Yet he is somewhat of a moderate, as Arab rulers go. And the U.S. military is maintaining a very significant concentration of troops, by the way, in the tri-border area of Jordan and Syria and Iraq. So the last thing that Americans want to see is their soldiers fighting the rebels. You can see how complex this then begins to become. It has echoing aftershocks all the way to Russia and to China and to the United States, in fact, into Africa and all over the world. So, we take a quick look at Bashar's regime. The future of a country, that is Syria, devastated by 14 years of civil war, that's a lot longer than the civil war in the United States, my friends, 54 years of dictatorship, and now what? It was just over 54 years ago on November 13, 1970, that Hafez Assad seized power in Syria from the rival factions of the Ba'ath Party, and the chaos that ensued in the years following the Six-Day War there in Israel. Few could imagine, says the Jerusalem Post, at the time that the rise to power of a disgruntled army officer, just another in a long series of coups in Syria, a country infamous for its instability, would mark the beginning of a long family dynasty, the longest in modern Syrian history, 54 years. So we move forward to 1979. In 1979, there was a peace agreement between Israel and Egypt. It is also the year that Iran turned tail from a quasi-democracy into a fundamentalist Islamic rule under Khomeini. Syria was added to the United States' newly established list of state sponsors of terrorism at that year, on a list which Syria remains to this very day, in fact, is the only original member of that list that's still on it. Now, this is amazing. This is Syria that we're talking about. Now, Assad desperately clung to power, employing a range of brutal methods to crush his opponents. That included bombing his population centers, the very cities, using chemical weapons against his own people, whatever it would take to keep them under dominion. His two loyal allies, Russia and Iran, came to his rescue. Russia's entry into the war shifted the dynamics, halting both the practical and psychological momentum toward the regime's collapse. So Assad was saved. But the war's devastation, foreign involvement, and the rise of jihadist groups such as ISIS left Syria with a shattered economy, a fractured society, and a reality of daily violence that persisted for nearly a decade and a half, says the Jerusalem Post. The rebels identified signs that the regime had been significantly weakened due to the war between Israel and Hezbollah in neighboring Lebanon, and so launched an offensive. The number of attacks carried out by Israel in Syria over the past year has also nearly tripled compared with previous years. And add to this Hezbollah, which in the past mobilized to save Assad, has been completely paralyzed. So you can see the dynamics have changed so quickly. In fact, it's almost as if the Titanic had turned on a dime. And we know it couldn't. But it has. And there's been a perpetual state of war since 1948. What was 1948? Well, 1948 was the year Israel became a nation. And she's had external and eternal enemies. Syria was one of the main ones. Perpetual war with Syria. So the state of Israel and the Syrian Arab Republic have never had any formal ties since the inception of both countries back in the 20th century. That means that Syria has been no friend of grace, so to speak, with regard to Israel. Arab defeat in the Six-Day War, you see, there was 1948 when Israel was born, and then the Arab nations came against Israel to try to push her into the sea, and that's how the 750,000 so-called refugees were gathered into camps that are now referred to as the West Bank and Gaza. That's where they all came from, because the Arab nations tried to attack Israel and had warned the Arabs in the land of Israel that if they would just get out, then these Arab nations would come in, push Israel into the sea, and then they could come back and own all the land. It didn't happen that way. So the Arab nations were responsible for 750,000refugees, Arab refugees, being put in fenced encampments. They were responsible for it. And ever since, have refused to do anything about it. There was no interest, not real interest, among the Arab nations to do anything about the very people that they claimed to love and serve. On October 6th, 1973, Syria and Egypt responded to their humiliation in the 1967 war by invading Israel on the holiest day of the Jewish calendar year, Yom Kippur. And it was a shock, complete surprise. And Syrian forces invaded Israel and made territorial gains in the Golan Heights. And after 3 days, Israel had pushed most of the Syrians back. Israel then launched a counteroffensive into Syria, shelling the outskirts of Damascus. And Syria lost some 3,000 troops in its third major war with Israel. Efforts to completely destroy Israel. Now, do you think there was a lot of love lost between Israel and Syria? No. How could there be? And yet the Jewish people, Israel, did try to help Syria, Syrians, let's put it that way, Syrians, by providing needful things like they have tried to do in Gaza with Hamas. During the 1990s peace talks, Syria demanded that Israel withdraw to their pre-1967 borders. In other words, they said, well, you shouldn't gain any advantage because we attacked you two or three times. Why should you gain any advantage? We want it all back. But despite those efforts, the territorial dispute over the Golan Heights persists until during the presidency of Donald Trump, the Golan Heights was declared by the United States of America to belong to Israel. So, now 2024, as Israel has routed Hezbollah from southern Lebanon, attacked Iranian proxies in Syria, and dealt the Islamic Republic a blow by attacking its oil infrastructure, things are seriously shaken. So, in effect, it seems as if Iran has abandoned Assad. In fact, an internal memo that was viewed by the New York Times reports that a situation is as if Iran accepted the fall of Assad and has lost the will to resist. In other words, they turned their back on their ally, Syria. Maybe Iran already was beginning to see the handwriting on the wall. It had largely lost Hezbollah, it had locked Hamas, and now Syria is caught in the midst of this? What are we supposed to do? So can you imagine what the potential rollout effects, echoing consequences, aftershocks, would be in the Iranian regime, since the people themselves have been lorded over by a tyrant, just like Bashar al-Assad, through Khomeini and his dictatorship, Islamic dictatorship. So Iran has admitted that the current setbacks to the Syrian regime are a challenge for its regional axis of resistance, which consists of Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, and Iraqi militants, the Syrian regime, and other groups. Iran is in deep trouble. Maybe it's restoring the opportunity for the Iranian people to say, you know what? Maybe this is our turn. Maybe this is our opportunity to overturn Khomeini. Then also, with regard to the matter of the toppling of Assad's regime in Syria, some are saying, even the Jerusalem Post has an article saying, it could be bad news for Israel. How could it be bad news for Israel? A weakened Syrian regime under Assad? But here's the rub. Israel would have liked to see Assad weakened, but maybe not overmuch, not to be toppled, because there is a sense in which they had it reasonably good under Assad. Why? Because Assad, in spite of his brutal dictatorship, had maintained a secular Islamic government, unlike Turkey. Erdogan in Turkey had turned their government into a fundamentalist Islamic government, much in the likeness of Khomeini in Iran. Everything is up for grabs. Where will it lead? Where does all this fit, if anywhere, in the long range of biblical prophecy? We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, on the front page are two great videos. First, an interview and discussion of Chuck's book, Out of Egypt. Also, a great TV interview with Chuck regarding his book, Seduction of the Saints. Much more videos, a For Pastors Only section, and also you can view Chuck's weekly teachings, all at his website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Also on Chuck's website, listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast. Listen to the archives. Maybe you missed a program. Check it out at saveus.org. Also, there are some great resources, hospitality information, also information about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, newsletters, articles, prophecy, prayer and revival information, all at saveus.org.
What are the ramifications of the Syrian defeat, shall we say, by the group of three different groups aligning themselves as rebels to take down, depose Bashar al-Assad there in Syria after his reign following his father's reign, a total of 54 years of government, dictatorial reign by the Assad family? What are the implications? Are there any biblical implications? Well, we want to take a look at that in this segment of the program today. And Benjamin Netanyahu has called the fall of Assad a historic day. Well, is it just historic from the standpoint of, well, this is the great fall of 54 years of the bitter rule of the Assad family? Is that it? Or is there something else more historic about it? Well, I think it's very difficult for Jewish people, including Mr. Netanyahu, to actually delineate what that history would be. Because then it would begin to move into the area of prophecy. Speaking of moving into the area of prophecy, perhaps we could begin with this. Losing Russian bases in Syria could threaten Putin in Ukraine. Moscow, a staunch backer of Assad, whom had intervened to help in 2015 in the biggest Middle East foray since the Soviet collapse, is scrambling to salvage its position with its geopolitical clout in the wider region and two strategically important military bases in Syria on the line now. Russia's two military facilities in Syria had been put on the state of high alert yesterday. An air base in Syria's Latakia province and a naval facility at Tartus on the coast. That's the one that really caught my attention. The Tartus facility is Russia's only Mediterranean repair and replenishment hub, and Moscow has used Syria as a staging post to fly its military contractors in and out of Africa. So losing Tartus in particular would be a serious blow to Russia's ability to project power in the Middle East. Oh, projecting power. What nations does the Bible indicate may be interested in projecting power in the end times? Well, if we were to go back to Ezekiel 38 and 39, referring to the so-called Gog and Magog battle, it would seem, and most experts, most theologians believe, that the Gog and Magog reference refers to Russia in the north, that it's the leader of the Gog and Magog coalition that will attack Israel in the latter days to take a spoil. Well, if Russia loses these two military bases there on the Mediterranean in Syria, which is a short distance, relatively short distance at the north of Israel, now what are they going to do? That was a huge, huge position for Russia in Syria. Is this new group taking over the rulership and reign in Syria going to allow Russia to continue to maintain those two bases? And if so, what are they going to ask in return? How will that affect Israel? How would that affect even Russia's ability to choreograph nations such as Iran, which is formerly called Persia until 1935, and Libya, and Togarma, and Germany, and many other nations with them to attack Israel to take a spoil in the latter days? You see, what's happening here, and I'm not going to try to tell you this is that, I'm not going to try to tell you the specific interconnections between that that aspect and the return of Christ, for instance, or any other aspect of biblical prophecy, but to suggest to you, to help us understand that it's events like these that actually begin to form and create the fulfillment of prophecies such that we otherwise would think would never happen and be impossible. Next, Israel will step up airstrikes on Syrian stores of advanced weaponry. Israel has watched the upheaval in Syria with a mixture of hope and concern as it weighs the consequences of one of the most significant strategic shifts in the Middle East in years. Strategic shifts, one of the most extensive and strategic shifts in geopolitics of the Middle East, that should get our attention. It's those kinds of movements that begin to reverse the status quo and put in position the very things, create the environment for the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. In fact, going even further than that, Israel National News today had a report to come out that the political leadership in Israel is discussing whether or not to take control of areas deeper in Syrian territory to prevent them from falling into the hands of Islamist rebels. Now, that one really got my attention. Why would that get my attention in particular? Why should it get your attention? Because, my friends, Syria operates land that God ultimately gave to Israel. Did you know that? Back in Genesis 12 and 15 and 18, when God gave the meets and bounds to Abraham of the land that he had given to the apple of his eye, Israel, the physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not Abraham and Ishmael, but Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he gave them the meets and bounds of the land. What are they? Well, they're from Lebanon, into Lebanon, down to the river of Egypt, and then from the Mediterranean Sea all the way to the Euphrates River. Well, guess what land exists between Israel, as we now know it, and Euphrates? Syria, and perhaps even Jordan. Do you see then how this kind of thing then begins to set up the radical changes that will be necessary to receive hundreds of thousands, in fact, millions of refugees from around the world, Jewish refugees, back into Israel, where the land, as it stands, is so small that it's very difficult, almost impossible, for them to be received. In other words, the land has to expand. It has to expand back into the time of David when he was king and Solomon. That's the time when Israel occupied the meets and bounds of the land that God had promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, that all having been said, we shift to even more focused on the concept of what this might have taken place in its essence, has affected and fits in the bigger picture of biblical prophecy. First of all is this. A report came out yesterday from Jeff King, who is the president of an organization called persecution.org. Persecution.org. He's been on this program. And the article or the promotional piece that came out begins like this. Chaos and fear grip Syria's Christian community amid Islamist rebel takeover. The sudden takeover of Aleppo, that is one of the major cities there in Syria, has thrown the lives of the city's 20,000 Christians into chaos. Now, that's just in one city. The warring factions were vying for territorial control over Aleppo, an historic Christian community, who are now fearing for their survival, are prompting them to flee their homes. Militant takeover in Aleppo alone has sparked a mass exodus, with many Christians seeking refuge in nearby regions or within local churches. Interesting. You see what we've been saying here for the past 2 months, almost 3 months now, is that persecution is becoming one of the foremost issues facing Christians in our world. And now this situation that has arisen is causing, just from one city in Syria, 20,000 Christians cast into chaos. In other words, persecution, because those that are coming into rule, unlike Assad, who was, yes, a Muslim, but had a secular government, these new rulers coming in are fundamentalists. They are like ISIS. They are tough, tough, tough. They hate Christians. They want a complete Muslim nation, just like Modi in India wants a complete Hindu nation. This is how persecution arises. And you may think it's not arising in our country that way, but it is. The seculars in this country are becoming more and more virulent against Christians living out their faith in this country. And it's coming out daily in terms of lawsuits, attempts by cities to pass laws against Christians from living out their faith. We're not yet fleeing our homes, but it's moving very, very rapidly. We'll be right back, Steve.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for a greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by His Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
You cannot imagine the level of my gratitude for the privilege of being able to come before you day after day after day, confronting the deepest issues of our hearts and homes, to encourage, to warn, to woo, to prepare, to strengthen, to disciple, all of these things. What an incredible privilege it is. And I want to let you know, based upon the fact that we're talking here about here yet another massive persecution situation coming into our world. Remember my latest book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. You think those people in Syria might have been interested in reading that book had they known that Bashar Assad's regime was going to collapse, one in which they had been able to live in relative freedom for all these years because it was a secular government? For decades, Christians lived in Aleppo in Syria in peace under the Assad regime, but now one of their last safe havens in the whole Middle East has come under attack. Do you not, can you not, are you not able to see how that same spirit, friends, just as Jesus and each of his apostles, Paul, John, James, Peter, and so on, every one of them warned about the persecution to come. And it's not just to come upon people there in Syria or in China or in India or whatever. No, it's over the whole world. Jesus said, if they hated me, they're going to hate you. Why do you think you should be different than your Lord? Do we really think that an American exceptionalism is going to make us an exception from the Jesus warning, from Paul's warning, Peter's warning, James' warning, John's warning? Come on. This book was written as an expression of divine compassion and mercy to enable us, to enable you as parents and grandparents, pastors, parachurch leaders, all of us, to prepare those that we love, because it's coming. Don't think it's not. These people had almost no warning in Syria. Tough as that nation was, they thought they were protected by Assad. But Assad can't protect them. He's gone. He fled to Moscow. He got asylum in Russia. Where are you going to find asylum? In Moscow? No. Friends, we find our asylum, so to speak, in the presence of the Lord. As we humble ourselves before Him and begin to prepare ourselves to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. That's where we find our protection. And that's why we need to be prepared. Get a copy of the book. Please don't delay. It'll be a great gift to your family. $25 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Okay, now, we want to move from all of these developments and their various nuances to take a look now even more specifically at Syria and Damascus from a biblical viewpoint. In fact, from a prophetic viewpoint. There is a passage in the book of Isaiah that, for those who are familiar with the Bible, and I say familiar with the Bible, would know exactly what I'm talking about. It's found in Isaiah chapter 17. So those who have seen serious conflict from the position of Isaiah 17 prophecy believe that this, what's happening in Damascus, is ominous. With 2 million people, it's been at the center of a long civil war. Over 400,000 have already died, and the city streets are now rubble. And the prophecy suggests that Damascus might face a catastrophic end, echoing its troubled history. That's a report coming from IsraelHeadquarters.com. To grasp Isaiah 17's prophecy about Damascus' destruction, we have to look at Damascus's history. That ancient city, Syria's capital, dates back to the third millennium before Christ, one of the oldest cities continuously lived in. Some say it's the oldest city in the world. Some say it's the third oldest city in the world. I'm not going to argue that point. In other words, it's old, it's been around, it's ancient. The Isaiah 17 prophecy says Damascus will become a ruinous heap. It predicts that the Damascus destruction would be so complete, leaving the town of Arar deserted with only flocks there. Now, Damascus has seen many invasions and destructions, from the Assyrian conquests to recent conflicts. It's also faced a lot. The prophecy in Isaiah 17 talks about the destruction of Damascus, though. Now, the Assyrian Empire first marked Damascus in 732 B.C. Tiglath-Pileser III, the king of Assyria, invaded and destroyed it. He took 800 people and destroyed the 591 cities in the area. Later, in 722 B.C., the northern kingdom of Israel fell. The Assyrians captured Samaria, its capital, and made Damascus even more important in the region. So the destruction of Damascus has been a big part of its history, faced many invasions and troubles. So the prophecy in Isaiah 17 reminds us of its troubled past. But how about its future? It seems that the prophecy of Isaiah 17 about Damascus's destruction is about a big topic among scholars, because it talks about the Assyrians attacking Damascus before. Many think that that prophecy was fulfilled before Christ ever came. Others think that the prophecies will come true when Jesus starts his millennial reign and judges the nations. Israel's enemies, though, like Syria, are going to face judgment. Some think the war in Syria is Isaiah 17 coming true. Others say it happened in the 8th century B.C. So which is it? I cannot tell you absolutely. Nobody actually can. I've had debates with a particular pastor in a particular denomination. They always see things as if they're absolutes, and so they'll point to something that happened in 800 B.C. and say, see, this is that. Well, that may not necessarily be true, because what we find in the nature of biblical prophecy is, as rabbis frequently say, it's like the helix of history. It's like something is fulfilled here, and then 500, 1,000 years later, it's fulfilled again, and then it's fulfilled a third time in the what they call the helix of history, as it comes ever closer to the top, much like a picture of the Tower of Babel. Which is it? I do believe that we see historical evidence of exactly what the rabbis have said. The prophecy is often very much like the helix of history, that there's an early fulfillment, then there's a midpoint fulfillment, and then there's an ultimate fulfillment. Is that the case here? Well, it appears that Damascus is going to have a rough time. Already is. And Damascus is approximately 130 miles northeast of Jerusalem. So, that being close to Jerusalem, you may remember the Apostle Paul, who on his rampage, going out from Jerusalem to find and rope up Christians and bring them back to the high priest, he was on his way to Damascus. Why in Damascus? because that's where the people were first called Christians. That's true. In Syria. So he's going to Damascus where there are a bunch of Christians. He's going to rope them up and bring them back to the high priest. And on his way, God, in his mercy, strikes him off his high horse. He falls to the ground blinded, and God cries out to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" And it changes Paul's life. And then God sends him throughout the Gentile world, first to the Jewish people, and then throughout the Gentile world to establish churches. That's why he's called the Apostle Paul. So Syria and Damascus are an integral part of biblical history, and now it appears prophecy. Just as Jerusalem is going to be attacked, Zechariah chapter 12 says Jerusalem is going to be attacked by all the nations. Well, if Damascus is only 130 miles away, and they're fighting with modern weapons of warfare, it would appear that Damascus, at the very least, is going to be caught up in the middle of it. Is that what's going to cause Damascus to be destroyed? I don't know. But we do know that somehow, since Abraham was a Syrian coming out of Ur of the Chaldees, God is going to give a measure of mercy to the remnant of Syria. The Bible makes that clear. God is going to give a mercy to the remnant of Syria. Because it was through Syria that the foundation of our faith came. For the same reason, a similar reason, God is going to give a sense of mercy to a remnant of Egypt. Why? Because Egypt was used by God to extend hospitality to God's people, including Joseph, during a time of great famine. Yes, they took him into slavery, and they're going to be punished and already have been punished greatly for it. But because they extended hospitality to Israel, God is going to give a remnant of Egypt, the Egyptians, a kind of extension of mercy, like he's going to give to Israel itself. It's amazing. God doesn't forget. But you see, the Amalekites, he said, "I'm not going to forget you because you did exactly the opposite. When my people came out of Egypt, you did everything you could to attack their backsides. I mandate your destruction." Same with regard to the Edomites. The Edomites, yeah, they attacked Israel, their brother. God says, "I don't put up with that. You're out of here." Just read the book of Obadiah. Look, there's so much more we could say, but I think we've shared enough here. The nations that were once enemies of Israel continue to be players in the ongoing conflicts of the Middle East. The burden of Damascus, as Isaiah talks about, it'll be taken away from being a city and a ruinous heap. Isaiah chapter 17. Thanks for joining us. Get a copy of the book, When Persecution Comes, Preparing Our Hearts for Perilous Times. $25 there on the website. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. God bless. Be a blessing and pray for those folk over there. 20,000 Christians in one city alone, Aleppo.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.